WTLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
It's Afternoons with Amos for Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. And this is one of those programs where we need to find out, know how we all are feeling about an event that occurred about 400 miles from Indianapolis in a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri, where a grand jury of 12 people, 9 white, 3 black, found there wasn't enough evidence to put an individual on trial for any charge from manslaughter up to murder one. We're talking about the decision last night of the grand jury in the Officer Darren Wilson case in the shooting of Michael Brown. What we want to do today is to hear from our community. We don't want to hear from network pundits. We don't want to hear from out-of-towners. We want to hear from our community. Not just African-American, but our city, our community. And we're going to do that in a number of ways. You know, I got Drew today focusing on the controls in the console in Master Control. And I'm going to be focused not only on our Facebook page at AM 1310 The Light and our Twitter feed at AM 1310 The Light, but also my Facebook page at Amos WTLC Indy and our Twitter at Amos WTLC Indy. Oh, my Facebook is Amos Brown at WTLC. We want to hear from as many people as possible today. The only ground rules will be I want you to keep to the point of your point that you want to make. If I think you're straying, we'll move on. It's about hearing from as many in the community as possible. Regulars will be limited to 45 seconds, no joke, and I got a stopwatch here today with me. But I want to start out with somebody who's got experience in the law, a lawyer, civil rights law, former president of the NAACP, Rod Bohannon, on our live line to kind of start us out in perspective of where we are post Ferguson decision. Rod, welcome.
Welcome, sir. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine. When I started skimming the grand jury testimony at 7 o'clock this morning of Officer Darren Wilson, I was struck that either he was the worst trained police officer in the history of police officerism, or he was not somebody that loved his fellow man. How critical was the testimony that Mr. Wilson gave? He forfeited his Fifth Amendment right not to testify before the grand jury. And I understand that, his testimony was early on in the process.
Well, I started reading as you some of the testimony, and a couple of things struck me. Clearly, as I saw some of the language that he used, for example, stating he was a 5-year-old kid and the monster stuff and strength, that told me that his testimony had been already prepared. He'd already gone through his testimony with an attorney, probably somewhere from their FOB or their equivalently, and walked through what he should say.
Mm-hmm.
So it was already shaped and framed for the grand jury. Let me back up for a second turn. The grand jury was charged to see whether or not he violated the statute, and that is for the use of deadly force. That's really what they went to. They didn't go to see whether he violated any law in terms of murder one, murder two, manslaughter. They start out by saying that did he have justification for use of deadly force. And Missouri law tracks many of the statutes, mostly framed in Indiana, that if he can show fear when defense of himself or a third person, that he's justified using deadly force. And so when you read the transcript, you have to look in terms of that framework, in terms of what he was trying to get the grand jury to see, and that is that, you know, he was fearful of his life, and therefore his action was justified. Doesn't matter whether or not you can argue about whether the aggressor or non-aggressor, did the aggressor end when Mr. Brown fled and was running. That didn't matter. It was that when he used the deadly force, did he see himself in fear? And did it continue onward? My second question is, as I read the transcript, started reading and trying to get a framework in terms of what the prosecutors were trying to get to. It was clear to me in my mind that the prosecutor was not using the grand jury, as he said, for purpose of having an independent investigation. But if you look at the question to some of the witnesses, challenge their credibility, raise an instance in terms that you really see this, challenge in terms what they saw. What struck me was the gentleman who was a senior gentleman who testified that he specifically saw Mr. Brown with his hands up, and the prosecutor, who was a former police officer, had challenged him in terms of, did you really see him with his hands up?
Right.
And so that told me at that point, as I read it, that that it was not necessarily for the purpose of trying to get independent fact, but really to shape as to the issue whether or not there was a justifiable use of deadly force.
The Michael Brown's family, the attorney, Mr. Crump, said in the press conference that is kind of winding down right now that he feels there needs to be a law, a Michael Brown law, that requires body cameras on every police officer in this country. How do you feel about that, Rod?
Well, I've been looking at that issue, and I've been talking to folks around the country, and I know the NAACP has been looking at it. And you have a number of things. One, you need to shape in terms of whether the camera's going to be in an all-time and only for incident. You need to shape in terms of how long the tape is going to be kept. You have to decide whether it's going to be with sound or not sound.
Mm-hmm.
Again, tapes themselves is not the be-all and end-all. It's just one of the tools in terms of trying to get an understanding of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so across the country, as people look at this idea, they're trying to look at protocol. There are many police departments that have cameras, but it's the discretion of the police officer when they want to turn it on. So unless you decide those discussions after outright, if we're going to have that discussion in Marin County, we need to start having that discussion now. In terms of whether it be a 24-hour camp, would be only after something happened, you know, where to take storage, et cetera.
Is the, in terms of moving forward here in Marion County, briefly, what steps should we as a community take here in Indiana and Marion County and Indianapolis so that we don't have Michael Browns here?
Well, if you go back, we've had the Michael Browns here. If you go back to the early 70s, late 70s, early 80s, you've had a number of police active shootings. Not the least that with Michael Taylor. So we've had it. What the issue is that we've never really began to get a hand around it and tackle what is the deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what does that mean in terms of fear? And what does that element mean? We really haven't looked at in terms of police training. One of the things that was interesting in this case here was, you know, I've never seen a police officer who tried to pull up in their car next to you if you're fully a felon.
Mm-hmm.
They normally get out of their car, they're behind their door, they got their gun out, and they're telling you to stand still. And so I looked and said, okay, is this practice, or is there something else mentally going on? And so we really have to take a look in terms of the statue itself and really get some real handle about it. And you need to also keep tabs of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court last term into a case that came out of New Orleans, but it has long-term implication nationwide. It sort of gave broad immunity to police officers
right.
in the course of their duty and the kind of injuries or harm that take place in the course of their action during their duty.
One final question that I thought was very unusual, and that was Darren Wilson's language. He compared in his testimony Michael Brown to a demon and Hulk Hogan. That's kind of unusual for somebody particularly to describe anyone in general as a demon, and particularly African-American. I could understand if he'd have said thug. I could have understood if he called him out of his name. But demon, that's an odd term.
That was him being shaped in terms of having gone through his testimony and knowing what kind of language to begin to frame the story. Here's what's interesting, which was not said in the press unless you read carefully. He says, okay, you know, we got the victim was 6'4", 240. But they've not told you that Officer Wilson is 6'1", and a half, 220.
Mm.
And so when you think of a person who's been in and out the police department, is probably in and out the gym quite regularly, you know, no one says, wait a minute, is that really true that you got a kid who's saying I'm 5 years old dealing with, you know, a Hulk and I can't grab him, I'm afraid of him? No, that clearly was, he was trained, joined cross-examination probably by, you know, the attorney saying, here's how you need to shape the language to make the grand jury see what you want them to see.
Seemed to me if you're hit by somebody 6'1 and 240,
you're going to have a big bruise. And the photos that the grand jury were shown of Officer Wilson didn't have that big of a bruise.
Well, we don't know how long. We just know how long this struggle that they claim to take the call. I just have never heard of where police officers allow themselves to have a struggle in the car. That's just not part of their training.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, you know, led me to say, okay, there's some real issues here. And the last part was interesting was, you know, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen discussion about whether or not Officer Wilson was or was not a member of the Klan. It was supposedly a picture showing him at a Klan rally, or at least at a Klan rally, maybe in gear. That would never be in the grand jury. And why that may be important has to go to do with mindset. What was his mindset? It's very clear when you read part of the transcript, you'll see that he and Mr. Brown did have exchanges in words, and it got quite heated, and he admitted he was cussing at him. And so did it get out of hand? Did he allow it to get out of hand? Also, when he turned to begin to retaliate back at an 18-year-old kid back and use the language, and he admitted that he was, you know, heated discussion, and there was, you know, a lot of exchanges. So that, again, tells me that, you know, the grand jury was used not in terms of being independent of the claim, but really to get at this. And my last point is this.
Yeah.
You know, we need to have discussion with the prosecutors often terms of, in situations like this, will he be willing to allow it to go to a judge? Because the judge would have had a probable cause hearing.
Mm-hmm.
The probable cause hearing would decide if the judge believed, having heard the same evidence, at least under oath, and you have a chance to cross-examine, that, you know, there was justifiable to use this deadly force, that would have been the end of it. But clearly that was not the intent of the grand jury. It was not to get to, you know, whether any crime was committed, but rather was there a justification for using deadly force.
All right, Rod Bohannon, attorney, appreciate it. Let me start today with Buck. Hi, Buck.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
Fine, sir.
Love show. A couple of things. First thing is, you know, I'm listening to him talk about the cameras and everything. I'm looking like this. I'll just look at the people that serve the public. It's kind of like, especially with police officers, it shouldn't even be a discussion if all the stuff is going on as far as people, you know, doing things. Camera them up, mic them up. It's kind of like one of them kind of things when they come out, we turn off for this long time. No, when they get out and they start talking to the person we're dealing with, it mics up and it comes on right automatically.
Mm-hmm.
They have no choice in turning on, turning off. That'll solve that problem. We really find out who really the good officer are, who the bad officer, that kind of stuff. Because the technology here is nowadays, you can do that kind of stuff. The next thing I just wanted to say is, you know, this is, it's like it's lining up for, you know how they always have court cases and they always go back and refer to this case and this case. You know, it's kind of like, let's line it up and get to a point where we know that this is the way we can do this because we can fine line those tweaks of good and bad to make it so if it comes to be bad, we can make it good, or if it's good, we can make it bad. Now, kind of bad even sound like I'm saying that, but that's what I'm seeing. It's kind of like, you know, you see how, it's kind of like, let's get a protocol of things to do and not to do, so if we do get that situation, you know, and it's like it's lined up to that, you know, that it's bad that the country's going that way, but it just looks like that.
I appreciate it, my brother. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, another game, we're in the same situation. And my thing is I'm so tired of people complaining and about the way they're being treated and things that have happened to our black youth, our black people total. The thing that gets me is that when it's time for you to put up or shut up, most of the people shut up. They don't vote. They don't do what they're supposed to do. And I think that, one of the things you need to start, asking people is your unscientific polls. What are you doing? What are you doing to help? Are you part of the problem? Are you part of the solution?
Great point.
You need to do something on that because all these people call in and always got something to say about everybody else. But what are they doing?
What tree have they planted?
Right.
Great point, my sister. I appreciate it. Let me go to Marvin at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos. You know, this case, to me, was different from Trayvon Martin's situation. We know Trayvon Martin was totally innocent. For me, this case was all about excessive force. You know, after watching the video in the convenience store, you know, I never thought that Michael Brown was innocent or not even culpable in what happened, you know, because I believe he did at some point try to struggle with the police officer.
Mm-hmm.
The issue for me is the excessive force. You know, and I read a little bit in pieces on CNN of Darren Wilson's testimony, and I believe he said that all he could see at one point when he shot him in the head or shot at his head or whatever it was, that was the only thing that he could see or get a, you know, get his gun on as he was supposed supposedly running towards them. But my issue is somebody made a good point earlier. There's two things we have to do. We got to look at police using excessive force, but then we got to look at our young people in the aspect of how do you interact with police. And as I hear a lot of people saying, how do you get out alive, you know? And so I don't want that to be lost in the argument. We can talk about, you know, Darren Wilson and white people and all of this, but there's some serious, serious, serious issues that we have to deal with as a community. And in my view, as somebody that supported some type of charge being against this guy, is that we can't, you know, it's so easy to get angry and, like the lady said, yell and scream, but it's about action. Not only just the white man, and they're going, what are we going to do to grab, how many of us are grabbing these young men and talking to them? I do it. I have an after school program. I'm working with them every day. But what are we doing to try to teach them how to respect, you know, adults, how to interact with the police, because they are in a position of authority. So thank you, and that's all I have.
All right, good points. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after his name is. You can react to the situation and how you feel about what happened in Ferguson. 239-1310. 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Or you can comment on Twitter at AM1310TheLight or AmosWTLCIndy, or you can comment on Facebook at Amos Brown, WTLC, or AM 1310 The Light. Let me go to Minister Nuri Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. Brother Minister, how you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, Brother Amos. Of course, you know, frustrated and bothered by what just took place last night, but other than that, doing well.
Yeah. What is your take on all of this, and in response to the first couple of callers, where do we go from here? What do we do to move forward?
Well, I think that from the observation of the pain that we are experiencing as a people in America, one of the positives that I would like to note, hopefully, is that the 10 shots fired by Darren Wilson has seemed to serve as an alarm clock that has awakened this generation of our people. And the murder of our brother Mike Brown seems to have also killed some of the selfishness, disunity, and apathy that exists. Where you see with us as a people, generally when something bad happens, we have sympathy, meaning that I feel bad that something bad happened to you. But whenever you see people crying like I was hurt, and seeing people all over America and the world hurt like they were, this was not an expression of sympathy, meaning I feel bad that you hurt. This was empathy, meaning that I feel the pain that my sister Leslie and brother Mike Brown Sr., I'm feeling the pain of them that have lost their son to, in my opinion, a murderer.
The other thing is, and what the previous caller, Minister Nuri, talked about was also the responsibility of how we react to police. Does that also have to change?
Well, I think that this, you know, we can't make the adjustment to be punctified or lose our manhood or our human dignity just to service or to bow our head down where we can be less of a victim of racism. The problem with police and young black youth is not the response of the young black youth. The problem is the attack on them because they are black youth. I think that the biggest thing that needs to take place is to understand that the response we have as a people is not the cause. It is absolutely the effect of 400 years of being handled and mistreated by those in authority. And it is now in our DNA. That pain is in our DNA. And these circumstances and situations like a Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown and our young brother in Cleveland and the sister in California and brother Eric Garner in New York, these things are reigniting and resurrecting the hurt that is found in our DNA. This comes from our sojourn in America. So I would say that the appropriate response is now for us to figure out how we can buck dance better for those who misuse power. I think that some would say, of course, burning is too extreme, and some would say singing, praying, and standing outside registering people to vote is too soft. Well, the Holy Quran advises us that the best course is the middle course, and I think that we should organize ourselves to hit the enemy where it hurts, and that is in their pocket.
You know,
we should boycott, Brother Amos. This is my opinion. We should boycott White Friday. I know they call it Black Friday, but black businesses don't benefit from it anyway. It's White Friday. We're going to boycott White Friday, and I think that whenever millions of people, black, brown, red, yellow, and white, decide, you know what, instead of, since hands up, don't shoot, didn't work, then we're going to put our hands up and we're not going to shot this time. And let's see if we can start getting justice in the future.
So,
and I believe that we will.
So stay home and watch the football games on White Friday.
Yeah, right. Just keep your money in your pocket on White Friday. And, I mean, and to be honest with you, Brother Amos, you know, footnote to this point, we black people are the leaders in unnecessary spending anyway. Well, you know what unnecessary spending is? Unnecessary spending is spending money that you don't have to buy stuff you don't need from people that you don't like to impress people that you don't even know. So we don't need the stuff anyway. So if we love our brother Mike Brown and we love justice, I think it'll be a good, universally bold statement that does not destroy property. I always say, you know, generally when someone breaks into a house or wrecks a car or destroys a business, the owner comes out better whenever they put their insurance claim in than they were before they started. So they got insurance to handle the looters and what the looters stole. But there is no policy nowhere whenever we decide by the hundreds, thousands, and millions to say, you know what, I'm not going into your store and buying nothing from you until we start seeing better treatment for us in America.
Minister Nuri Muhammad, always appreciate your views with the Nation of Islam here in Indianapolis. Appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's Amos. We'll go to a couple more calls and we'll take a break. Let me go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello, Amos.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yes. That minister just spoke exactly what I was thinking and wanted to comment about. I think that black people need to show their support to the Michael Brown family by not buying anything for Christmas. Make Christmas gifts, just make some Christmas gifts and give them out to people. Make candy, cakes, and donate that. Do it the old-fashioned way. Don't spend any money at all. I just think we do need to hit the others in the pocket.
All right, I appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah, I think at Christmas time, people, families need to get together, invite other teenagers over to their house.
Hello?
Something like the old-fashioned way.
Right.
And spend the whole day Christmas visiting someone, not in large groups, but maybe five at a time to have friends. And then somebody should chaperone them, and they should go to a movie maybe on in that afternoon or something, whatever.
You made some excellent points. That's kind of bringing back the reason for the season, because we forget that Jesus is the reason for the season. I appreciate it, my sister. Let me go to Rick, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon, Amos. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good, good. I had two thoughts I'd like to bring it to. Bring to mind. One is that when we started letting people tell us that we couldn't whip our own kids, and we started this crazy law, this law that goes directly against the Bible about disciplining our kids, and we find our kids in trouble all the time, it's particularly in a racist country where you got one time to make a mistake, say something crazy to a police officer, do something unbecoming, and you might end up dead. Well, we set our kids up for being murdered on a regular just off of that alone, even though we know the cases where they haven't done absolutely anything. But let's face it. Our kids these days are abrasive, and feminists just feel entitled. We got these young boys who are feminine. When I say feminine, I mean they get mad real easy. They don't have their emotions. They can't control their emotions the way they're supposed to. And that's a feminine quality. It's not a masculine quality. And they don't get this type of training as far as and the discipline that they used to get when they just got a whooping and just let them be, no, you can't do what you want to do. You do what you're told. And because of that, the police are beating the crap out of our kids and killing our kids in the streets. That's my first point. And my second point is we need to start getting on juries, because nobody's going to be found guilty of anything when they're not, when the jury is all, is mostly white, or all white. No matter, nobody's objective, you know, on the jury. They're just looking at it from, you know, their perspective, and not the perspective. They're not looking at it from a holistic perspective. They're not being realistic about what happened. So we need to be on more juries. We're not on juries, and we have case after case after case after case of people getting railroaded or getting let off without paying the price for whatever it is they did based on the jury. Those are my two observations.
All right, I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. We want to hear from our community. Your thoughts on this whole mess with Ferguson. Is the system broken? And how about that prosecutor? That was at press conference last night. I don't know whether that was whether he's going to win an Emmy for worst performance by a democratically elected prosecutor in the history of the country. It's getting there. Anyway, Afternoons with Amos, getting your reaction. We'll talk to as many as possible more after these.
Hi, this is Linda Elsie Clements, and when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Back to the phones in Reverend Floyd. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to send my sympathy with the family, but I also want to say that, as I told some of the young people yesterday, you need to vote. Everything starts from that process also. Some of the people that did not vote for these leaders that are in, and then we educate our communities. And Black Friday is, it's a dilemma, because poor people will benefit from Black Friday, unfortunately. But I think if we can educate, get our people out, let them vote, that's going to be a big change in the United States of America.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is trying to talk to as many as possible. So we're limiting the regulars to 45 seconds. Let me go to Georgia. Georgia, you got 45 seconds.
Hey, Brother Brown.
Yes.
You know what? I'm on board with the minister. I ain't buying nothing for Christmas, not even an Indianapolis Star. And you know something? Let me tell you this right quick. I had to get a white man told this morning. He's talking about, they burning and they looting. I said, well, Sherman and the Union Army burned the pathway to the sea and looted everything down there, right down Atlanta. Now, you know what? People need to start moving their money out of these banks and anything else, and don't buy no Indianapolis stuff.
All right, my brother, 239-1310, back to the phones. And Robert, you got 45 seconds.
Okay, yes. Amos, anytime you got the Black communities in a system that deprive the Black community of resources, i.e. jobs and the dignity, and then superimpose that with racism and discrimination, you're going to have these reaction. And we all know that the criminal justice system is rigged, and I totally agree with the brother minister that, and I've known all along that Farrakhan has a true message. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Brother Lyons at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine, Reverend Lyons. How you doing?
Good, good. I have a good friend in St. Louis that kept me posted. He said Bishop Lake, the Bishop of the Church of God in Christ, sent the governor. He said, I saw the letter. He sent the governor a letter and said, we have spent $150 million in your city for the last 3 years, and due to what's happening, we will not be back.
Uh-oh.
Now, that's how you do it. You gotta hit him in your pocketbook.
So one of the major religious denominations that has held their convention in St. Louis.
They have their convention for the last 3 years in St. Louis, Missouri. He, Bishop Blake, in California, wrote him, the governor, and said, we will not be back anymore because of what's going on. We spent $150 million for the last 3 years. They won't get that no more.
All righty. I appreciate that information. Thank you, brother. Let me go to Luana at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos. This is Luana. And I just wanted to say a couple things. Number one, we have to have our parents get back to being parents. Until our children understand to be able to follow instructions on the first command, the request was get out of the street. It wasn't an argument about back and forth. And too many of our parents allow, or should have the dialogue back and forth with them about what they're going to do and what they're not going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get back to the place where the children understand that when we give an order, it's to be obeyed the first time, and it's not about a discussion, but it's about you being able to follow instructions. None of this would have happened if the instructions would have been followed. Thank you.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me go to Michelle at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I believe that what we need to do as a nation, we need to boycott throughout the cities because the buying power, if we would take some of the buying power away from some of these establishments, who are they going to sell to? That's all we need to do. We need to get out of that slavery mentality and stop working for the boss man and work for ourselves. Or else if we can't work for ourselves, make up a job that we can do for ourselves. We need to take some of the buying power out of their hands. That's what we need to do.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me go to Billy at 239-1310. Hi, Billy.
Hey, Amos. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
my
sir.
My comment about the Ferguson situation is that, number one, we need to stop trying to make this a race issue. I don't believe that the primary issue is about the race. I think the issue should be about cops not being held accountable when they break the law. Because anytime we take a serious matter like this and we make it a race issue, then we're obviously outnumbered, so we're going to lose.
Let me ask you a question, because I had a white friend of mine send me an email this morning concerned about this police action incident yesterday that involved a white suspect who's got a record. And he was down on the south side, and they were trying to serve a warrant, and they asked him to surrender, and he kind of reached in, reached down in his pants, and the cop thought he was getting ready to pull a gun, fired, he's wounded, the suspect was not armed at all. And so my friend wrote me and said, shouldn't we be concerned about that? Now, that sounds like what you're saying.
Right, yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying that it is, you know, race isn't a factor.
I understand.
I'm just saying that, you know, when we have to, you know, big court cases like this, and we're trying to, as a nation, you know, get some justice
mm-hmm.
for, you know, innocent lives being taken, you know, by officers or whomever, you know, I think that, you know, we should put the race issue as a secondary, you know, issue and make, you know, justice a primary issue, because the media, you know, kept talking about, you know, a white cop killed a young black man, and so now it's a race issue.
I got it.
And whenever there's a race issue, then, you know, the majority is going to win, and that's what happened with this, just like with the Trayvon Martin thing. You know, as soon as they made it a race issue, and it's like, okay, well, this is a minority group, nobody cares anymore. You know, but if it's just a legal issue, then it's like, okay, well, let's look at all the facts, all the evidence, and let's go through the court system the right way and get justice. But as soon as, you know, we start saying, well, a white cop killed a black kid, then everybody plugs their ears, and, well, we don't want to hear that. You know, everybody just playing the race card, and then we get no justice.
All right. Excellent points, my brother. I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's afternoon. His name is Lemie. Let me go back to the phones. And D. Hi, D.
Hi, Amos.
How are you?
This is D. It's V. And what I was calling for was, it's homicide, genocide that's covered up by the law.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said it's homicide and it's genocide that's covered up by the law. That's what it seems like to
okay.
me. And when you asked, where was it broken? When was it repaired? This has never been repaired. This has been going on from the face of the planet that, you know, our young black men are being killed. And then when you asked about the white person that was shot by the police, he was wounded, but he was not killed.
Yes.
There's a difference. There's a difference in when they see a black man that they overkill. They shot this boy more than once, more than twice, and this person was just mortally wounded or just wounded. But most of our young men, when they're shot, they do overkill. They empty the gun. So that's what my comment is today.
All right, I appreciate it. I got a comment on my Twitter at AmosWTLCIndy. And they were dealing with the caller called a couple callers ago that said Michael Brown should have followed instructions and gotten out of the street. On Twitter, the person says, last caller wrong. LeVar Edward Jones was shot while reaching for his license. Following directions is no guarantee. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name. So let me go back to the phone. And Laverne, hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos. I wanted to make a comment about the minister who stated that we should boycott on Black Friday and, well, for Christmas. And I agree with that. However, I do want to say that I've been in the school system for the last 8 years, and our young Black men, too many of them, are out of control. They are out of control, and that starts in the home. When are we going to stop blaming others for our actions? We need to train and teach our young men in particular to be respectful to authority, to women, to each other. We are the biggest destroyers of ourselves. That's my comment.
All right. I appreciate it. 239-1310. Back to the phones and Pastor Brad. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
Fine, sir.
As your previous caller, yes, race may be a factor that they like to highlight in this situation. And regardless of that, what we need to do more, my suggestion, is go back to our roots. A lot of parents, a lot of these children are brought up without proper parenting. A lot of fathers are incarcerated. Some of them not educated enough by their grandparents or their parents to be proper parents. A lot of people don't have that support system. That structure will help them be better parents and bring their children up a lot better. The children will be more involved in criminal activities because they'll be involved in activities with their family entirely. Now, as far as trying to boycott Black Friday, yeah, I suggest that might be a good idea, too, because it shouldn't be called Black Friday. I mean, there's like associating the color black as being rare or something that is alienated, unappreciative. It's just highlighted in the wrong way. Everybody's wanting people to vote. Again, if we focus more on family, try to have a lot of these young single mothers be much more selective about who their partners are and become in monogamous relationships, these children will have a steady home. It takes more than just a mom and a dad. A lot of people blame it on parents. We need grandparents as well. A lot of these young women and these young parents, you will find that don't have their family support system. Without that structure, those grandparents can't stabilize those children and correct them when they're wrong, so they can bring their children up a lot better.
Let me ask a question, because I'm hearing the comments about young people. But then I'm thinking that people are listening to this and thinking, it's these young people that were out in Ferguson last night, committing violence and looting. And so I gotta ask the question, when they had the riots in Harlem in 1964 and in, Watts in 1965 and after the assassination of Dr. King in a lot of places in 68, the young people were, this was a different kind of young person. And I can tell we got so many calls and we done blown out the calls. So we'll take a break because we probably got to reset all the calls because we've broken the phone lines already. We're only 40 minutes into the program and we've blown the phone lines. 239-1310. We want a good discussion too. 239-1310 after these.
Hello, this is Maggie Lewis, president of the City County Council. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Tony Mason is the new president of the Indianapolis Urban League. He joins me on our live line. Tony, we've gotten a lot of reaction so far in the first 44 minutes of our program today. And a lot of it is, yes, we've got to have better police community relations, but we've also got to, you know, instill more positive values in our young people. What is the Urban League and how can the Urban League help in terms of how do we move forward both nationally and locally?
Well, one of the things, Amos, first of all, thanks for having me on. We'd like to start out by saying our hearts definitely go out to Michael Brown's family. And what has transpired, you know, really his killing and the decision of that indict Officer Wilson, they're just painful reminders of some of the overarching root cause problems that we're all dealing with here across the country, whether it be, you know, criminal justice disparities, volatile police community relations, unemployment, economic inequalities, challenges with education. From an Urban League perspective, one of the things I can tell you that is taking place at the national level and something that we're going to embark on here at the local level is really partnering with community organizations. You know, at the national level, what you see happening is the National Urban League coming together with the National Action Network, the NAACP,
the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation. They put together a 21st Century Agenda for Jobs and Freedom, which, again, when we start talking about root causes, we definitely have to address those. And so we're going to be working very closely with organizations here in our community, because we recognize that as we call for calm and peace in the streets, we have to truly begin the process of working together in a unified voice to address the challenges that are facing the issue. High unemployment rates, low academic achievement, all of these things are factors that lead to what is taking place in Ferguson. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to that community in light of what has transpired. We also are in the process of planning what will hopefully be a community, if you will, mm-hmm. press conference tomorrow, where we want to speak to this in a very unified sort of way. Ourselves, Indiana Black Expo, Race and Cultural Leadership Network, and a number of organizations are coming together to address it. And again, it's time for us to really pull together as a community to deal with these issues. And in fact, at the national level, there's a 5-point agenda, if you will, mm-hmm. that speaks to a number of things that have to be addressed, achieving economic parity for African Americans and disadvantaged minorities and individuals, promoting equity and educational opportunity, which, as you know, last night, Amos, we hosted an informational session here on educational choice, with the focus being on encouraging parents to learn more about quality educational opportunities, not here to denigrate or disparage schools and our districts that are struggling, but to uplift those that are doing well in educating our young people. We know we have to do all that we can to protect and defend voting rights. But the key there now is, we've got to get people out to vote. Isn't that right, Amos?
Yeah,
got to
get them out.
That last election didn't reflect well on people valuing and appreciating that right that many of our ancestors strived so hard for us to have.
Is it also one of the things we have to focus on? Maybe two things. One, the Brown family, through their attorney, a press conference less than an hour ago, said we need to make a national focus on a national law to require every police officer to wear a body camera. To protect them and to protect the community. And then the second thing is, particularly with some of our callers that were talking about working with young African American males in this city, we need as a community to be serious about those recommendations of the Your Life Matters Task Force.
Now, absolutely. All of those things. Advocating for the body cams on police officers, I think, is important. Trying to bring an end to racial profiling. Looking at jobs, I have two teenage sons, and I know with my oldest, it was definitely a challenge in helping him to find summer employment before he went off to college. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, if you look around, we see, adults in jobs that traditionally were jobs that were held by young people back in the day when you go in McDonald's and other places that, typically were the companies or businesses that employed young people. So we know that has to be addressed by the city, by the state. And I also think it's important that our corporate community here in Indianapolis come together to make it a priority when and where appropriate to help us find employment for young people, because it's going to be critical. At the end of the day, people, have to have just the necessities. Otherwise, if they don't have them, then you have turmoil, you have chaos.
All right, Tony Mason, the head of the Indianapolis Urban League. I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoon News with Amos and Drew. I woke up to Good Morning America and was wondering why George Stephanopoulos was in St. Louis and not in New York. Well, World News Tonight just tweeted out a picture of George Stephanopoulos next to Officer Darren Wilson. He's got the exclusive interview. And I bet you they'll show some of it tonight. On World News Tonight on Channel 6. According to George Stephanopoulos' tweet, just finished a more than hour-long interview with Officer Darren Wilson, no question off limits. Yeah, this I got to see. 239-1310, back to more of your calls, reaction to Ferguson. Let me go to Jackie. Jackie, thanks for waiting.
Yes, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
I'm not going to say much except for we as a people need to get on our knees and pray to God, trust God, because he has no... separatists. If we just, like the gentleman said before, if we get together and are saints, or even just get on our knees and ask God to deliver us all in all situations.
I appreciate it. I'm going to go to Pamela. Hi, Pamela. Pamela?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm just going to make a couple of comments. I keep listening to all of these persons calling in, and some of them are driving me pure D nuts. When they talk about if we would just teach our children to be more respectful. Yes, we do need our children to be more respectful, but that is not going to deal with the issue. The woman that called in and said that that young man would still be alive if he had just been more respectful must not know her history at all. When we taught our children to say yes to boss and not stare him in the eye, did that stop them from lynching us? When we used to bow down in front of them, did that stop them from killing our children? No. We are not going to solve the problem only by teaching our children to be more respectful. We have to address the actual issue, which is people who feel that our children are expendable, no matter how respectful they are. That's all I have to say. I'm just sick of these nutty people.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Reverend Hatcher at 239-1310. Hi there.
Praise the Lord. I agree with the caller. Just got to say, it's just like a bubble. You know, things, a bubble pop here, one pop there, 2 years ago, 5 years ago.
It's like the TV show Pop-Up Videos.
Yeah, Pop-Up Video. Now the bubble done busted, and now we have to deal with the situation. And here in the city of Indianapolis, as a caller to the radio station, a lot of times, the system is broken. Not only here, but all over the country for it, dealing with minorities, poor people, and people of color. And I made my statement, I told you before, I was 1977 here in the city of Indianapolis. I was falsely accused of a crime. I spent 17 years in the prison system and end up through a PC comeback and show where the police had a ladder where the police was pointing me out to the witnesses and all kind of crazy stuff that the police department did. And, end up while I was in prison, somebody attacked me, and I ended up killing the person in prison and tried to file a death threat against me. Like here to this day, I have a case for manslaughter, but I got a manslaughter case for being in prison. I didn't even have supposed to be there in the first place. And then I go back to 2012, when my daughter Shanice was 16 years old, when she went out to Fountain Square incident, I don't know if you might remember that, where she was walking home from the library and a bunch of white people jumped out there and jumped on her. She fought them back. The police department and the prosecutor office charged her with 8 felonies, and she was 16 and throwed her in the Marion County Jail. You know, so there is a problem here in the city of Indianapolis, just like it was in Ferguson. And if we don't stop and get this stuff in order and change things, we is going to keep going on and on and on. There is going to be a rally today at 5 o'clock down at the Circle. There's going to be a rally down at the Circle on the south side. It's going to be a peaceful demonstration to support the Brown family. And we continue to pray for the Brown family in the city of Ferguson.
All right. I appreciate it, my brother. Let me go to Pam at 239-1310. Hi there.
Okay. Hi there.
Hi.
No, I was just saying that, again, black folks, we have to remember that in this case and in several cases, we are the victims. And when I hear educators talk about, you know, our children are out of control, well, a lot of white kids are out of control, too. You know, and as educators, it is their responsibility to set the tone for the standard, regardless of family dynamic within the school system, which is also broken. And we have to stop waiting as a culture for justice. We have to demand it. There are levels of protest, just like with the looting and the rioting. I don't agree with it. It's what happens, like you mentioned in the 60s. But there are other levels of protest that are happening. The NAACP is going to file civil rights charges, I read, as well as what people can do. We can contact the prosecutor's office there. We can write letters. We can flood their phone lines. We can contact the media and continue to write letters until they pay attention. But here as well.
Is it also what Reverend Lyons said earlier, a major religious convention that had been held in St. Louis for a couple of years, saying, we ain't coming back here?
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that there, but I also agree with that here.
Mm-hmm. So we can't just pull out of some cities that do this. We have to pull out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
That are, and it's not just black people that are outraged. You have a lot of white people that are outraged and Mexican people that are outraged as well. And when we can force the police departments to first of all make sure that they're screening people who do not have these ongoing biases.
You know,
I watch it over and over again where it doesn't matter, like the one lady said, oh, and I disagree with her as well. I have seen with my own eyes people, our black people being compliant,
mm-hmm.
and still being treated rude, disrespectfully, beaten, tased, all kinds of things. We see it, you complain about it, but then if you complain about it, then you're a target. So, you know, there's a lot of laws and there's a lot of issues in this community, and we have to stop falling into the trap and saying that it's us, because it's not all of us. I don't even believe that it's most of us. But the people that talk about it are not willing to do anything, not even do anything proactive to work with young people or even come up against these systems.
Mm, good points, my sister. I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's name. We'll take a break. Come back with more of your calls or emails at praiseinto.com. Text messages 37890, keyword Amos. Or comment on Twitter at AM1310 The Light or Amos WTLC Indy. Or our Facebook pages, AM1310 The Light on Facebook or Amos Brown WTLC on Facebook. It's Afternoon's with Amos, getting Indianapolis's reaction to the Ferguson decision after these.